You're listening to Wikisleep Podcast, a podcast designed to help you relax and unwind through calm, quiet storytelling. I'm your host, Adrian Sala. As ever, I'd like to begin today by taking a few slow, deep breaths. But I know not everyone wants to do this part. If you'd rather jump straight to the story, just skip ahead about 90 seconds. But remember, deep breathing has an amazing calming effect, helping reduce stress and anxiety, and allowing you to relax a little. To do this, simply breathe out all the way, emptying your lungs and abdomen completely. Then, at your own pace, breathe in slowly and fully, filling all the way back up again. At the top of your breath, pause for a moment before breathing out slowly and emptying again, completely. Pause at the bottom of your breath, then repeat the process as many times as you like, as often as you like. Deep breathing is a great way to get grounded. Whether you're at work, in a stressful situation, or just settling down to listen to a podcast like this. Today's story is about Mae West, an American actress, singer, playwright, screenwriter, comedian, and cultural icon, whose career spanned 7 decades. She was also considered a sex symbol and one of the most controversial stars of her day. Mary Jane West was born on August 17, 1893, in Brooklyn. She was the eldest surviving child of John Patrick West and Tilly Delker. West's father was a prize fighter known as Battling Jack West, who later worked as a special policeman and had his own private investigation agency. Her mother was a former corset and fashion model. West was just 5 years old when she first entertained a crowd at a church social, and she started appearing in amateur shows by the age of 7. She often won prizes at local talent contests and began performing professionally in vaudeville in the Hal Clarendon Stock Company in 1907 at the age of 14. She originally performed under the stage name Baby May and tried various personas, including a male impersonator. Her first appearance in a Broadway show was in 1911. The show folded after 8 performances, but at 18, West was singled out and discovered by the New York Times. She next appeared in a show called Vera Violetta, whose cast featured Hal Jolson. She was encouraged as a performer by her mother, who, according to West, always thought that anything she did was fantastic. Other family members, however, were less encouraging, including an aunt and a paternal grandmother who were Catholic Protestant. In 1918, West finally got her big break in the Schubert Brothers review called Sometime, opposite Ed Wynn. Soon after, she began writing her own risque plays using the pen name Jane Mast. Her first starring role on Broadway was in a 1926 play she entitled Sex, which she wrote, produced, and directed. Although conservative critics panned the show, ticket sales were strong. The production did not go over well with city officials, however, who received complaints from religious groups, and the theater was raided, with West arrested along with the cast. She was taken to the Jefferson Market Courthouse, where she was prosecuted on morals charges. And on April 19, 1927, was sentenced to 10 days for corrupting the morals of youth. Though West could have paid a fine and been let off, she chose the jail sentence for the publicity it would garner. While incarcerated on Welfare Island, now known as Roosevelt Island, she dined with the warden and his wife. She told reporters that she had worn silk underwear while serving time, in lieu of the burlap that the other girls had to wear. She served 8 days and then got off for good behavior. Attention surrounding the incident brought her the expected media exposure. Newspapers crowned her the darling bad girl who would climb the ladder of success wrong by wrong, which she embraced. Her next play, The Drag, dealt with homosexuality and was what West called one of her comedy dramas of life. After a series of tryouts in Connecticut and New Jersey, West announced she would open the play in New York. But due to efforts by the New York Society for the Suppression of Vice, it never opened on Broadway. West explained, "The city fathers begged me not to bring the show to New York because they were not equipped to handle the commotion it would cause." West was also an early supporter of the women's liberation movement, but said she was not a burn your bra type feminist. She was also an early supporter of gay rights and publicly declared against police brutality that gay men experienced. In her 1975 book, Mae West on Sex, Health, and ESP, she wrote, "I believe that the world owes male and female homosexuals more understanding than we have given them. Live and let live is my philosophy on the subject, and I believe everybody has the right to do his or her own thing, or somebody else's." West continued to write plays, including The Wicked Age, Pleasure Man, and The Constant Sinner. Her productions aroused controversy, which ensured that she stayed in the news and resulted in packed houses at her performances. Her 1928 play, Diamond Lil, about a racy, easygoing, and ultimately very smart lady of the 1890s, became a Broadway hit and cemented her in the image of the public eye. And Hollywood, of course, came calling. In 1932, West was offered a contract by Paramount Pictures. She was close to 40 at the time, which was considered a late age to begin a film career, especially for women. But she was nonetheless a huge success. She made her film debut in Night After Night in 1932. At first, she did not like her small role in the film, but was appeased when she was allowed to rewrite her scenes. In her first scene, a hat-check girl exclaims, "Goodness, what beautiful diamonds," and West replies, "Goodness had nothing to do with it, dearie." Reflecting on the result of her rewritten scenes, her co-star, George Raft, was quoted as saying, "She stole everything but the cameras." She then brought her Diamond Lil character, now renamed Lady Lou, to the screen in She Done Him Wrong in 1933. The film was one of Cary Grant's first major roles and boosted his career. West claimed to have spotted Grant at the studio and insisted that he be cast as the male lead. She claimed to have told a Paramount director, "If he can talk, I'll take him." The picture was a box office hit and earned an Academy Award nomination for Best Picture. The success of the film also saved Paramount from a potential bankruptcy at the time, grossing the equivalent of $140 million today. Paramount recognizes that debt of gratitude today with a building on the lot named after West. Her next release, I'm No Angel, teamed her with Grant again. It was also a box office hit, and the most successful of her entire film career. In the months that followed the release of the film, references to West could be found almost anywhere. From the song lyrics of Cole Porter, to a Betty Boop cartoon, to a painting by Frida Kahlo called My Dress Hangs There. Kahlo's husband, Diego Rivera, paid his own tribute, saying, "West is the most wonderful machine for living I have ever known." The writer F. Scott Fitzgerald said that West was the only Hollywood actress with both an ironic edge and a comic spark. Spanish artist Salvador Dali was also fascinated by West, and he created a watercolor painting called Salame West. In it, he turned her blonde curls into curtains, her eyes into paintings, her nose into a fireplace, and her lips into a love seat. This last piece was so compelling that British arts patron Edward James requested a three-dimensional version. The Lip Sofa became an iconic Dali creation and is still in production today. As Variety put it, Mae West's films have made her the biggest conversation provoker, free space grabber, and all-around box office bet in the country. She's as hot an issue as Hitler. And indeed, by 1933, West was one of the largest box office draws in the United States. And by 1935, she was the second highest paid person, male or female, in the country. The highest paid person was William Randolph Hearst, who invited West to his home in San Simeon, California. "I could have married him," she later explained, "but I got no time for parties. I don't like those big crowds." Around this time, West's controversial film scripts began to be heavily edited as the censorship outlined by the Film Production Code began to be seriously and meticulously enforced. To fight this, she would intentionally place extremely risque lines in her scripts, knowing they would be cut by the censors. She hoped they would then not object as much to her other, less suggestive lines. Her next film was Belle of the 90s. The original title, It Ain't No Sin, was changed due to the censors' objections. Despite Paramount's early objections regarding costs, West insisted that studio hire Duke Ellington and his orchestra to accompany her in the film's musical numbers. Their collaboration was a commercial and financial success. But her next film, Goin' to Town, received mixed reviews as censorship continued to take its toll by eroding her best lines. Her following effort, Klondike Annie, in 1936, dealt, as best as it could given the heavy censorship, with religion and hypocrisy. Some critics called the film her magnum opus, but not everyone felt the same. Former suitor and press baron William Randolph Hearst sent a private memo to all his editors stating that the Mae West picture, Klondike Annie, is a filthy picture. We should have editorials roasting that picture, Mae West and Paramount. Do not accept any advertising of this picture. Paramount executives felt they had to tone down West's characterization or face further recrimination. It would be surprising, by today's standards, as West's films contain no nudity, no profanity, and very little violence. Though raised in an era when women held second-place roles in society, West portrayed confident women who were not afraid to use their sexual wiles to get what they wanted. "I was the first liberated woman, you know," she said. No guy was going to get the best of me. That's what I wrote all my scripts about. In 1939, Universal Studios approached West to star in a film opposite W.C. Fields. Having left Paramount 18 months earlier, West accepted the role of Flower Belle Lee in the film, My Little Chickadee. Despite the stars' intense dislike for each other, Fields' very real drinking problems and fights over the screenplay, the film was a box office hit. But religious leaders condemned West as a negative role model, taking offense at lines such as, "When I'm caught between two evils, I generally like to take the one I never tried." West's next film was Columbia's The Heat's On in 1943. Censors by now, though, had curtailed the sexual burlesque of the West characterization. The studio had orders to raise the necklines and clean up the double entendres. Her risque and ribald dialogue could no longer be allowed to pass. This was the only film for which West was not allowed to write her own dialogue, and as a result, it suffered from poor reviews and weak performance at the box office. West was so distraught after the experience, and by her years of struggling with the censorship office, that she would not attempt another film role for the next quarter century. Instead, she pursued a successful and record-breaking career as a performer in nightclubs in Las Vegas, as well as nationally in theater and on Broadway, where she was allowed, even welcomed, to be herself. But before retiring from film, West appeared in two separate sketches on ventriloquist Edward Bergen's radio show, The Chase and the Sanborn Hour, in 1937. She was on the show to promote Every Day's a Holiday. Appearing as herself, West flirted with Charlie McCarthy, Bergen's dummy, using her usual brand of wit and risque sexual references. West referred to Charlie as all wood and a yard long and commented, "Charles, I remember our last date, and I have the splinters to prove it." She was nearly banned from radio for the comments, but she didn't relent. More outrageous still was a sketch written by Arch Obler, starring Don Ameche and West as Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden on NBC. In the sketch, she told Ameche to get me a big one. I feel like doing a big apple. Days after the broadcast, the studio received letters calling the show immoral and obscene by societies for the protection of morals. Several conservative women's clubs and religious groups admonished the show's sponsor, Chase and Sanborn Coffee Company, for prostituting their services and for allowing impurity to invade the air. Under pressure, the FCC later deemed the broadcast vulgar and indecent, and far below even the minimum standard which should control in the selection and production of broadcast programs. NBC Radio scapegoated West for the incident and banned her and the mention of her name from their stations. They claimed it was not the content of the skit, but West's tonal inflections that gave it the controversial context, acting as though they had hired West knowing nothing of her previous work, nor had any idea of how she would deliver the lines written for her by Obler, which was absurd. West would not perform in radio again until 1950, in an episode of the Chesterfield Supper Club, which was hosted by Perry Como. Nonetheless, she continued to enjoy a record-breaking career in Las Vegas, Broadway, and London. When she revived her play Diamond Lil on Broadway in 1949, the New York Times labeled her an American institution as beloved and indestructible as Donald Duck. Like Chinatown and Grant's tomb, Mae West should be seen at least once. In the 1950s, she starred in her own Las Vegas stage show at the newly opened Sahara Hotel, singing while surrounded by bodybuilders. She explained its success by saying, "Men come to see me, but I also give the women something to see. Wall to wall men." On March 26, 1958, West appeared at the live televised Academy Awards and performed the song "Baby It's Cold Outside" with Rock Hudson, which brought a standing ovation. A year later, she released an autobiography, "Goodness Had Nothing to Do with It," which became a bestseller. To promote her book, West guest starred on television, including The Dean Martin Show in 1959 and The Red Skelton Show in 1960. She even granted a lengthy interview on Person to Person with Charles Collingwood, but it was censored by CBS and never aired. The reason? CBS executives felt members of the television audience were not ready to see a nude marble statue of West, which rested on her piano. Mae West was a shrewd investor, producing her own stage acts and investing her money in large tracts of lands in Van Nuys, a thriving suburb of Los Angeles. With her considerable fortune, she could afford to do as she liked. In 1976, she began work on her final film, Sextet, which was released in 1978. In her mid-80s, her failing eyesight made navigating around the set difficult, but she made it through the filming. Time magazine then wrote an article on the star, with a headline reading, "At 84, Mae West is still Mae West." West had been married decades earlier, in 1911, to Frank Satkus, whose stage name was Frank Wallace, a fellow vaudevillian she had met in 1909. She She was just 17 when they married, and she kept the marriage a secret. But in 1935, a filing clerk discovered the marriage certificate and alerted the press. At first, West denied ever marrying Wallace, but she finally admitted it in 1937. However, she insisted that they had had separate bedrooms, and she soon sent him away in a show of his own to get rid of him. She obtained a legal divorce on July 21st, 1942. In 1916, when she was still a vaudeville actress, Wes had a relationship with James Timoney, an attorney 9 years her senior, who also became her manager. By the time she was an established movie actress in the mid-1930s, however, they were no longer a couple. But they remained extremely close, living in the same building, working together, and providing support for each other until Timoney's death in 1954. West remained close to her family throughout her life and was devastated by her mother's passing in 1930. Her sister, brother, and father followed her to Hollywood, where she provided them with nearby homes, jobs, and sometimes financial support. In 1930, she moved to Hollywood and into the penthouse at the Ravenswood apartment building, where she lived until her death in 1980. Among her boyfriends while living there was boxing champion William Jones. The management at the Ravenswood building barred the African-American boxer from entering the premises, though. So Wes solved the problem by buying the building and lifting the ban. At age 61, she became romantically involved with Chester Rybinski, one of the muscle men in her Las Vegas stage show, a wrestler, former Mr. California, and former merchant sailor. He was 30 years younger than she was, and later changed his name to Paul Novak. He moved in with her, and the romance continued until her death. Novak once commented, "I believe I was put on this earth to take care of Mae West." In August of 1980, West tripped while getting out of bed. She was taken to Good Samaritan Hospital in Los Angeles, where it was revealed that she had suffered a stroke. She died a few months later, on November 22nd, 1980. Mae West was 87 years old.